Welcome back. I'm going to invite each of you to allow your body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this may be sitting, maybe lying down. It's more this energetic invitation to meet ourselves in the nobility of this practice, taking our seats as we do, as daughters of the Buddha, sitting in a circle as I like to believe women have always done, coming together in circles, not quite like this historically, but nevertheless, in these early moments of this sit, if it's helpful to call to mind an image of this global sangha that we have together created over COVID, over the COVID years, stretching from the Pacific Northwest down the stretch of California, Minnesota and Virginia, different parts of the United States that are included that I may be forgetting, parts in Canada, to Finland and Paris. Often we have a Dharma sister from Africa, and allowing yourself to feel into this expansive circle. Different time zones, the remarkable capacity we have to be able to be together across time zones and state lines and oceans via Zoom. And taking your place in this family of things. From Mary Oliver. Resting there just a moment, feeling into, even if it's your first time here, or maybe especially if it's your first time here, allowing, seeing if it's possible to accept the invitation of belonging in the Sangha. I check in, how is this nervous system, this animal body of ours? And for some of us, the system may be pretty steady and relaxed. Others of us may have nervous systems that are agitated, maybe even a little hijacked. Okay. For excuse me. For the anchor of our sit today, I want to invite us to stay in the body, mindfulness of the body. Let me go with what is truly my favorite anchor, which is that of the earth element. I can lean so heavily or rest or default myself into the energies of the mind, planning and whatever the mind wants to do, in this beautiful counterweight of being able to rest the attention in the earth element of this body. So it is externally, whether you want to call to mind an image of beautiful trees that are in your neighborhood. For us here in California and parts in the Pacific Northwest and Canada, the redwood trees, ancient beings, or beautiful rock, you know, the iconic spirit rock image of the tree and the stone. Mountains that may be nearby, mountains that may be cherished images from when you were young. So it can be helpful to hold that image, both as a way of saying, here, mind, do this, hold this. And then it allows us to relate. Oh, yeah. The elements in the tree, the mountain, the rocks, the earth beneath us. Same elements in these bones of ours, in this body. Can we allow ourselves to rest in these bones? I find it helpful to kind of have another visual of just the skeletal, the skull, the jawbone, the vertebrae, clavicle, shoulder blades, the rib cage, the pelvic bowl, the long arms, long bones of the arms and the legs, the tiny little complicated bones in the hands and the feet. What would it be like to give yourself permission to rest in these bones, in the relative stillness of the bones? As I said earlier, feeling into the sit bones, Maybe lean back a little from the computer screen as a way of occupying the back body, which can then help us land and rest more in the bones. This earth element. As we cultivate our, again, our capacity to be available to this element, it can even be helpful to ask the question, may I feel the earth element? May I connect to the earth element, setting this intention? May I rest in the bones? May I rest in this earth element, in this very body? Much like all of our bodies are resting upon the earth. And it can be easy sometimes to forget that, yeah, in the busyness of our lives. Oh wait, we are held here on this earth. We are being held by the energies of the earth. We are a part of, we are connected, we are made of the same stuff. We are not separate. Can we give ourselves permission to belong? Belong to this animal body, belong to this earth, belong to this Sangha. Just letting yourself play in this relational field of belonging to the earth, feeling into the earth element. As we sit together, remembering, please, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we notice. We're curious, we're gentle, and we see what happens. Nice. Thank you. As always, such a delight to be able to sit together. Today, I wanted to play around in the field of mindfulness of the body. And as the story goes, when on around the time that the Buddha was dying, Ananda, his cousin and right-hand man and recorder of many of his talks, was so sad, of course, and had said to him, "Who will be our best friend? Now that you're, when you're gone." And the Buddha replied, "Your body. Ananda, mindfulness of the body will be your best friend." And I love this story so much. And in part, what touches me so deeply about this is, I've shared this before, but I had a pretty traumatic childhood, and my body was not always a safe place in any way, shape, or form. And this, I know this is true for many of us that have had various traumas in the body. We very skillfully leave. This amazing power we have to dissociate. But coming back can be a little bumpy, right? And this being able to cultivate a relationship to the body of, like, as the Buddha said clearly, like, well, of course, Ananda, your body, mindfulness of the body will be your best friend. And this is such a mind shift, particularly that's not really what we're encouraged, at least here in the States, in our school systems. It's not what we're taught. It's not what we're encouraged to believe with the help of social media. And being able to land in this place of, oh, if this body, this form, if I can treat it like my best friend, what that might be like. And as a way, as a counterweight to what there can be such conditioning to just be in the mind, and that the mind is everything, you know, thank you, Descartes, of the rational mind, we can work our way through or figure things out or just remain here. And as I've shared this before, one of my favorite monastics, John Passano, has a talk and called it, "Your mind is a liar." And his instructions are like watching the thinking mind and just saying, "Liar, liar, liar." And again, it's just so radically different than a way of being in the world that I grew up with. But just being able to be able to look at the mind and be like, oh, totally unreliable. Shameless thoughts, like things come into the mind, like, whoa, where did that come from? Whether they're really snarky, mean comments or just, oh my God, comparing mind, or all the different machinations of the mind, many of which can be set up to kind of really give us a hard time. And I've certainly shared before that I really lived with a brutal internal dictator that would not hesitate to tell me the myriad of ways that I was falling short, and being able to soften that voice through a lot of metta practice. But again, this believing, like, I don't have to believe that. And that line sort of within all of us is our inner committee. And some of the voices are a little more reliable than others. But how do we really know where the wisdom resides? And as Joseph Goldstein points to, he's like, it's not here. And thinking and wisdom are very different things, as we know. And this idea of really cultivating our relationship to the body as an integral, essential participant in the cultivation of wisdom and truth. In the sense of, if we think of sort of the inner committee with all these different voices and opinions, what's reliable and what do we do, as particularly when we're trying to make big life decisions, well, what's reliable? If we just stay here, it's really hard to know. Which voice, what is the reliable, who's the reliable narrator in our own story? And it's so astonishingly helpful to be able to incorporate and understand, be open to understanding where the body's coming from, what sensations, what's there, like the body doesn't lie. Alice Miller's quote from the drama of The Gifted Child, you know, I'll paraphrase it. You can go about your life doing whatever you want to do, running away from things or not, but at some point, the body will present the bill. I can only run so far and so long. And I say this, I spent a lot of my teens and 20s running, and then being able to turn towards, okay, what's actually happening here? And it can be terrifying. Right? And this is why there are professionals that can help us navigate these really scary places, and being able to turn towards the body again with this incredible invitation of, your body will be your best friend. I seem to be sharing a lot about myself today, so forgive me, but I was at the dentist on Monday and Tuesday, and I am one of the most phobic dentist goers. Justly earned. A lot of dentistry from the dinosaur age a million years ago that was not so kind. And sort of, I can shake really easily. I'm like, I'm scared. And every time I go to the dentist, which was not so frequent during COVID, it's such an opportunity to work with them at mindfulness practice. I don't know how anybody goes to the dentist without it. But being able to be in the body and this terrible sound, and really being able to stay with the sensation of the body and move the attention. Okay. It was really tempting to keep all the attention in here, in the sound, in the what was happening with my mouth, and be like, honey, no, put the attention somewhere else. And so a sensation of fingers like this, or I cross my feet, and being able, again, this amazing capacity we have to redirect our attention. There's a call for it here. Oh no, unpleasant. Let's put it somewhere else. And the skillful ways in which we can redirect our attention. And it's like a skillful distraction, right? And we can, in these teachings, distraction, the word can kind of get a bad rap, that we want to have a unified mind, not a distracted mind. And sometimes what the focal point, or what's largest in front of us in the field of awareness, is just kind of intolerable, or it's too painful, or it's too much, that the system kind of gets overloaded. Okay. So then there's a skillful movement. Okay. Where else can I place the attention? Can I put it in my foot? Is there some part of my body? And for those of us who have migraines, or when we have a toothache, or just with an illness, when the body doesn't feel well, is there some part that feels okay? A fingertip, you know, a part of the foot. And like, oh, I can rest my attention there. And this ability we have to be able to shift around, okay, where is there a place that feels neutral? And sometimes it can be helpful to stay with unpleasant sensation. It definitely can unify the mind. And sometimes not. And again, I'm going to kind of keep repeating this phrase, but when we allow the body to be our best friend, that's our relationship to it. It's like, is it helpful to have my attention rest here? Sometimes, yeah, because there can be wonderful things to learn about, and the movement, the impermanence of, oh, it feels like this, but then this moment later, it feels like that, if it's tolerable. But we're not setting ourselves up to torture ourselves. And this amazing angelic dental hygienist was sharing with me a story of a little boy. He used to come to her, and every time he'd be like, is this going to hurt? And she's like, no, no, it won't hurt. He's like, you're lying. Yes, it will. And everybody come back in, is this going to hurt? No, no, it won't. And at one point she said, unless you come on Tuesdays, because Tuesdays are torture Tuesdays, but you have to ask for that specifically. And the kid's eyes like, boop. And the mom was there. She's like, what? And she's like, did you ask for the torture day? And he said, no. And he's like, well, then you're fine. That was just so sweet. But this idea of like the sitting practice is not meant to kind of make us sit in intolerable circumstances. And sometimes that can happen, particularly on retreats, when there's so much that can come up that it's just so hard to be with it. And again, this is a gentling process. We're not trying to set ourselves up to kind of white knuckle through whatever we need to sit with that's so difficult as a way of moving through it or clearing it out. It's like, oh, this is too much right now. Okay. Can I put my attention on being for those of us in the Pacific Northwest or in the Bay Area, like, can I imagine being in a fairy ring of redwood trees? Or where is there somewhere that the mind can take delight in as a place to rest? For many of us, the natural world we can avail ourselves of that, of even picturing being on a beach, or picturing being in the woods, on a mountain, by a stream, on our grandmother's porch, if that's a sweet memory, as a way of being able to skillfully say, let the mind rest here and bring the body along, right? If we have an image of a place that's beautiful to us in the natural world, okay, what's it feel like in the body to be there? You know, there's a way that the body can relax into that. I want to share a poem, and I apologize, I read it, I think a couple months ago, I didn't quite look it up, but so it is. Will be repetitive for some of you, but I love it, and it feels like it can be of benefit to this what will be in a minute, a conversation. And it's by John Rodel. The book is called Remedy, and he just numbers all of his poems. And this is number one. And this is really pointing to the complexities of this friendship with a body, that it's not just one dimension. And I think some of you may remember it, and just sort of this beautiful teasing out that it's not just one thing, this relationship to the body. So my brain and heart, my brain and heart divorced a decade ago over who was to blame about how big of a mess I have become. Eventually, they couldn't be in the same room with each other, and now my head and my heart share custody of me. I stay with my brain during the week, and my heart gets me on weekends. They never speak to one another. Instead, they give me the same note to pass to each other every week, and their notes they send to one another always say the same thing. This is your fault. On Sundays, my heart complains about how my head has let me down in the past, and on Wednesday, my head lists all the times my heart has screwed things up for me in the future, and they blame each other for the state of my life. There's been a lot of yelling and crying. So lately, I've been spending a lot of time with my gut, who serves as my unofficial therapist. Most nights, I sneak out of the window in my rib cage and slide down my spine and collapse on my gut's plush leather chair that's always open for me. And I just sit and sit and sit until the sun comes up. Last evening, my gut asked me if I was having a hard time being caught between my heart and my head. I nodded. I said I didn't know if I could live with either of them anymore. My heart is always sad about something that happened yesterday, while my head is always worried about something that may happen tomorrow, I lamented. My gut squeezed my hand. I just can't live with my mistakes of the past or my anxiety about the future, I sighed. And my gut smiled and said, in that case, you should go stay with your lungs for a while. I was confused. The look on my face gave it away. If you are exhausted about your heart's obsession with a fixed past and your mind's focus on the uncertain future, your lungs are the perfect place for you. There is no yesterday in your lungs. There is no tomorrow there either. There is only now. There's only this inhale, only this exhale. There is only this moment, only this breath. And in that breath, you can rest while your heart and head work their relationship out. This morning, while my brain was busy reading tea leaves and while my heart was staring at the old photographs, I packed a little bag and walked to the door of my lungs. Before I could even knock, she opened the door with a smile, and as a gust of air embraced me, she said, "What took you so long?" And I so love the sweetness of this and could so relate to it, of this battle between what can be the mind and the heart. And being able to honor, like, okay, these different orientations to play with this, the imagery here, the different orientations of the mind and the heart. And where can we find reliable places to rest within this body? Because it's not necessarily with one voice, right? Hence that kind of inner committee. And being able to find in our own form where the wisdom lies. Because it might not be just in one voice. But when we can have the different committee members in alignment with enough of the body to get that, oh yeah, a sense of congruence. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, this is true. This is what I know to be true. And being able to rest there. And I'm making a connection that I realize might not be true for everyone, but that part of our ability to be congruent and find a place to rest, let me phrase it this way. The congruence and finding our place to rest can be assisted by our connection to the natural world, that this is an animal body. Yeah. That, and I'll speak for myself, but the difference of being somewhere where it is mostly nature, whether it's just in the field somewhere, it doesn't have to be anything dramatic like Yellowstone National Park, but when we allow this system to be in a natural place, there can be a relaxing that, say, as is distinct from dropping ourselves in the center of Times Square in the city, which can be fabulous, but the system's pretty activated. There's a lot of stimulus. So being able to be in a place where there's this animal body that is made of the elements, the space, fire, water, earth, can be among earth, water, the sun, trees, that the system can relax. And in so doing, we can have a greater capacity to touch into our own body as supported by the natural world around us. Sorry. Said more eloquently by Linda Hogan, to be held by the light was what I wanted. To be a tree drinking the rain, no longer parched in this hot land. To be roots in a tunnel growing, but also to be sheltering the inborn leaves and the green slide of mineral down the immense distances into infinite comfort. And the land here, only clay, still contains and consumes the thirsty need the way a tree always shelters the unborn life waiting for the healing after the storm, which has been our life. And can we allow ourselves to be held by the natural world around us? Can we allow ourselves to be held by this animal body of ours? That we can often, through karma, causes, conditions, various events in our lives, that we can kind of be in conflict with. And I think that's sort of a thread that I'm hoping to explore in that our conversation later, of like, how can we quiet this conflict such that we can be emboldened and allied with the wisdom of the body, the different committee members and their opinions and everything, and being able to find the still point, again, of what is true in a sense of congruence. From Pablo Neruda, keeping quiet. Now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in the sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the men gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. And the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving, and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt the sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count up to 12 and you keep quiet and I will go. And this pointing to what happens when we allow ourselves to be still. Things still happen. Let's not confuse stillness with doing nothing. But there can be this settling, a settling of the inner committee, a settling of the agitation of the mind, with the help of being able to ground and root in the body. The settling mind may come easily to some, it may not come easily to others. And what I have found to be true and what I believe to be true, that when we can bring this swirling energies of trying to figure something out or perseverate about something, to drop that energy down into the body, oh, rest here. Let's be quiet and still in this collection of bones and see what happens. So I invite you to close your eyes. And that was a lot of words from me. So just taking a moment to bring the attention back into your own body, feeling the sit bones. Just notice how your fathom long form is doing. And see what happens if I pose this question of, and I'm going to say it a couple of different ways, and hopefully one of them will land, but what might it be like to have a sense of congruence, a sense of friendship and partnership with the body. And as I named at the beginning, this might, for those of us with trauma histories, it's not an easy ask. So it might just be, well, imagine. What might it be like to imagine this strong and foundational alliance with this best friend, the only companion we have in this lifetime? The only thing we are both born with and that we die with is this body. This body in its relative stages of health and aging. This body that does get sick. This body that will die. This body that allows us to move in whatever capacity we can move. How is it this, to let there be a opening again into this notion of, oh, this is my true best friend, this body. Noticing if there's a yeah, but, or some push away of this idea. How does this organism respond, the mind respond to this notion of, oh, this body, this is my best friend. If we allow ourselves to stand upon this foundation, might anything be different? Again, staying out of the waters of comparing mind or blame or shame, but to staying with this possibility, what might it be like to move in the world in a way that this very body, this fathom long form, which is said to hold all the teachings, oh, this is home. This is my best friend. And again, wanting to absolutely acknowledge the different states, relative states of health and disease of our bodies that's present in this room and for those that we love. Given that, these are givens. This body is like this at this time. It cannot be otherwise. Okay. Can I allow myself to rest in this body, the sensations of which may be pleasant, unpleasant, and rest? So I'm going to stop there. And thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.